This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the mini-sode.
I'm Morgan.
And I'm Sarah.
And this week, we are bringing you a mixed bag of current events episodes.
Yeah.
We're recovering October and November.
Because it's been a minute.
Yeah, you know, it's Corona. Coronavirus. So it's hard sometimes to do things. But we are going to bring you some true crime happenings from October and November. So strap into those seats, boys.
Exactly.
And girls and everyone in between. All right.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good. I was trying to think of a term I heard recently that was supposed to be like a gender neutral term.
Ooh.
And it made me laugh.
I tend to use the word folks.
Yeah, folks is a good one. Pal.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy and pal. I recently looked up what you would call like a niece or a nephew.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the term is nibbling, which I refuse to use. So we are going to have to come up with a creative term for that as well.
Yeah. I have never thought of that, but I also don't have any nieces or nephews.
Yeah. That is not what today's mini-sode is about, though.
Nope.
I'm so sorry that I immediately got off on a tangent. Do you want to kick us off with a true crime story from October?
I sure do.
All right.
So I don't know if this is big, like, in places other than Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But in Florida, on every single big fucking truck you see, you just see the Salt Life sticker on the back of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in October, one of the founders of Salt Life was arrested on manslaughter charges. So, on October 26th, the parents of 18-year-old Laura Grace Duncan called police to do a welfare check on her. Her father learned that she was in a Hilton hotel in Rivera Beach with her boyfriend, 54-year-old Michael Troy Hudo, who is one of the founders of Salt Life.
Not good.
Yeah. That's a big age difference.
That is.
Rivera Beach police responded to the hotel on October 29th, where they found the 18-year-old girl dead with a gunshot wound to the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
The room was rented in Michael Hudo's name with his wallet, phone, ID, and other belongings still inside. Detectives located him at a hospital in Jacksonville. And Rivera Beach is at the bottom of the state, and Jacksonville's at the top of the state.
Yeah.
And he had been taken to the hospital the previous day after having this episode where he was shaking and making delusional comments while at a gas station. And when the police interviewed him at the hospital, he started crying and said that he thought he hurt Gracie. He said that they had been in the hotel room playing as if they were shooting their finger as a gun at each other.
Okay.
And then he pointed a real gun
mm-hmm.
at her and it went off. He said that he panicked, left the room, and just drove until he ran out of gas. So, in addition to the manslaughter charges, he's also charged with possession of a firearm during a felony, and a judge set his bond at $255,000.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And like I said, he's one of the four co-founders of Salt Life, and the company was founded in 2003, and the brand name was acquired based on a tattoo on the back of Michael Hudo's neck.
Oh, wow.
So classy.
Yeah.
But in 2013, the company was bought out by Delta Apparel, so they don't really have anything to do with it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But on October 31st, Salt Life tweeted, "Sadly, we have learned one of Salt Life's co-founders have been charged with a felony. Salt Life sends their utmost sympathies to the family and friends of the deceased." And in 2013, the co-founders of Salt Life sold their entire business to the new owners. So at least Salt Life, like, said something, even though they're not, like, a part of that anymore. Or he's not a part of that anymore.
They, like, acknowledge that it still happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably in their best interest, I would say, that they did that. But that is still wild. Mm-hmm. I feel like just stop pointing guns like as a joke.
Yeah.
You know, like just stop doing that, because even if that is what actually happened, because that is sometimes what happened, like the safety's off and people are dicking around, guns are not toys. Do not play with guns as toys.
So my friend has a gun mm-hmm. that doesn't have a safety on it, and that is the most terrifying thing to me.
That sounds illegal.
Yeah, like I don't know why they would make that, because like yeah. if she, let's say, just has it in her purse and she's rummaging around her purse and hits the trigger, like it could go off.
Yeah,
like
that sounds super illegal.
Yeah, I don't know how it happens.
I'm going to look that up after this and see if your friend has an illegal gun, because that sounds illegal as fuck.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Editing Morgan here, and it turns out that it is not illegal and is actually much more of a common practice than one would think. So, fun fact, I guess.
So, for my October story, I am bringing you a tale from EcoWatch and CNN. Those are my sources.
Okay.
And the title is Flying Squirrel Poaching Ring Broken Up by Florida Wildlife Investigators.
Okay.
Which, yeah. Which,
I knew a girl who had a flying squirrel when I was young.
I saw a flying squirrel in action once when I was Ooh. In California, like just chilling, and I was like, oh shit, that's so cool. And because I'm just like looking at the news article and I see a picture of a flying squirrel, I would like to read you a note, and I'm sure most people know this, but still. But despite their name, flying squirrels do not actually fly, but rather glide between trees. So they're very cute.
But they look like they're wearing a little parachute.
Yeah, they're always, like, ready for fashion. Yes. You know, like, they can thrust out their arms and have a cute little cape. They're very silly, but very cute. But on to the story. So in around January of 2019, a local concerned citizen of Marion County, Florida... We both picked Florida crimes for our first one.
We sure did. Actually, I picked Florida for both.
Oh, really? Nice. But they noticed that something strange was going on and that someone had been trapping flying squirrels.
Okay.
So this anonymous tipster reached out to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, who then promptly launched a 19-month investigation that uncovered an elaborate flying squirrel trafficking operation.
Well, it's like those, what are those things? The slow loris or something that everyone, they're yeah. being trafficked from Costa Rica?
Yeah, people think flying squirrels are cute, so they want one, like, as a pet, basically.
Same.
But they had up to 3,600 of these protected animals captured and sold as part of their illegal wildlife trafficking ring.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a lot of flying squirrels that were apparently just chilling in Marion County, Florida.
Yeah.
I feel like we should check into our squirrels more. But basically, the wildlife conservation was like, stop. You can't do that. And... Yeah. You know, went after them. But the investigation has so far uncovered 7 suspects. And together, the group has racked up 25 felony charges, which include racketeering, money laundering there is a real thing, money laundering, and scheming to defraud. And all of them except one so far have been arrested, and I guess there's like a reason the final one hasn't been arrested. Probably can't fully bring the charges until there's more evidence.
Yeah.
But this happened, this article was published in like mid-October of this year. So if there are updates, I have not seen them. And the arrests took place between April and August of this year, and some of the men were from Florida and some of them were from Georgia. But they are like just now releasing this information, and the operation is crazy. Do you want to hear how it would go?
Yes.
So It worked roughly like this. Poachers set traps for squirrels in several Florida counties. Then the captured squirrels were sold to a wildlife dealer in Bushnell, Florida, who would then launder the wild squirrels through a licensed business that claimed that they were bred in captivity. And then South Korean buyers would buy the squirrels from Bushnell and have them driven to Chicago. In Chicago, the squirrels' true origin was further concealed, and a wildlife exporter would send them to Asia without knowing they had been illegally obtained. And then, when the operation grew larger, drivers from Georgia would help transport the squirrels from Florida to Chicago in rental cars.
This is the most elaborate thing I've ever fucking heard of.
It's so elaborate, and for some reason, it makes me so giddy. Like,
it's because it's tiny squirrels.
Yeah, like, this whole operation was happening for squirrels? What? I have tears in my eyes because I love it so much. Okay, so, Bushnell, who was the wildlife dealer,
yes,
he earned about, like, $200,000 in illegal proceeds, a little bit over that.
I feel like that's not very much.
Yeah, I mean, they are squirrels, but for three, like, almost 4,000 squirrels to that ratio, I don't know.
That's true.
And then the international retail value of the stolen squirrels would probably surpass $1 million. So, oh, wow. Then they would get more money. And then the article would once more like me to remind you that they do not fly, they do glide, just as a reminder. But yeah, basically, there was a really elaborate squirrel scheme going on in Florida, and it just tickles me so much. I love it. I love that that happened, and I hope the squirrels are okay, but...
Yeah, like, it's not a good thing that it happened. But it's just very
cute. The comedy of it is just like, what? It just sounds like someone wrote it for a movie,
yes,
and not real life. And I just, yeah. I don't like that animals were being poached, but the story itself is funny.
I didn't realize that we just had flying squirrels, like, native to Florida.
Me either. I didn't know they were up in here just roaming around that much.
I know. Like, I'm going to go to Marion County just so I can see some.
I feel like the Everglades, like,
yeah, like,
has
that
it,
area.
You know?
Well, I went.
Isn't that Marion County or no?
I don't know, girl.
I think
you
it
expect
is.
Me to know where Marion County is?
I
like,
don't
like, it's
know.
My job.
It's literally both of our jobs.
Yes. I'm Googling it. Google it. No, it's up by Gainesville.
Okay. I was wrong.
I went camping once by, like, Okeechobee area.
Yeah.
And at the campground, or maybe it was a little more north, but there's just wild monkeys everywhere, and it is the scariest thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Yeah, and one time, like, basically, they got released from, like, captivity where people were breeding them,
yeah,
and then they just got out of hand and they're just all over the place.
That's wild.
Yeah, they're like,
I don't
stay
like
away from the monkeys,
yeah,
because they have diseases.
Ever since that, like, one monkey ripped that lady's face off,
yes,
when we were in school, I like can't look at monkeys the same way. I watched a video online of a monkey literally stealing a toddler out of its mother's arms, and
what?
The parents are like, it's like climbing up onto the house, dragging this toddler behind it, and then the parents are like yanking the baby out of this monkey's arms.
I feel like monkeys are just like, they're like little kids, but with the mind of like
a serial killer.
Yes.
Yeah. It's horrifying. Wow. I'm glad this isn't our main episode and that we're getting our slap happiness out now.
That's true.
All right. But yeah, that has been October.
Yes. I'm going to kick it off with November.
Okay.
So my title is longest serving cannabis offender to be released early from 90-year prison sentence. So, Richard DeLisi was sentenced in 1989 to 90 years in prison for conspiring to traffic more than 100 pounds of cannabis into the U.S. from Jamaica. Just conspiring.
Just thinking about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's been in prison for 30 years now, and he's at prison at the South Bay Correctional Facility in Palm Beach County. He's now 71 years old, and he's set to be released as early as December 4th. And he's described as the longest-serving cannabis offender in the country for a nonviolent crime. A nonprofit organization called the Last Prisoner Project has been helping to secure his release. And honestly, the main reason why he's being released is because of COVID, and his health is declining. He has diabetes, arthritis. He's had a bunch of mini strokes.
Yeah.
So they want to keep him safe because hundreds of inmates have tested positive at this place.
Right.
Which is sad that that's the reason why he's being released. Still a good thing he's being released.
Yeah.
However, people have been working for decades to try and get him out of prison, arguing that he was never charged or convicted with a violent crime, and instead he was just used as an example by a judge who wanted to send a warning to other drug dealers. His son, Rick, was only 11 years old when his father was sent to prison, and Rick says, "It's been a lifetime of heartache and loss. We look forward to making the memories that a family should have been able to make. I can't wait to know my father is a free man." And while Richard was locked up, many of his loved ones had died, including his parents, his wife, and one of his sons. And his daughter was badly injured in a car accident and is now paralyzed.
That's sad.
Mm-hmm. His son, Rick, now lives in Amsterdam, and he says he doesn't understand how his father was still in jail, with the fact that there's all of these changing laws and attitudes surrounding marijuana, including in Florida, where he was kept, where medical marijuana is legal and recreational is, like, not charged anymore, whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's been decriminalized.
Yes, thank you. And he calls the American prison system a vampire that feeds off those at the bottom.
True.
Yep. And he also says, "I can't even count the money we've spent trying to get him out." So when Richard is released from prison, and he's expecting to spend Christmas with his family, which is nice.
Very nice.
His son Rick plans to pack up his family and fly to the U.S. to see his father despite coronavirus, saying, "I need to receive him. I need my one-year-old to know her grandpa."
Yeah. Yeah, that's so fucked up. I think everyone who's in jail for marijuana charges, especially in a state where it's legalized, should be released, because there's still people, like, I'm pretty sure in California who are in jail for marijuana charges, and it's just so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like you said, it's unfortunate that the only reason they're letting this man go is because he was old and, like, getting sick, not just because, like, oh, this was a fucking stupid thing to charge him for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And apparently, what I didn't mention is that he was being held in Palm Beach County, but he was sentenced in Polk County, or arrested in Polk County, and he was arrested along with his brother.
Yeah.
But his brother appealed and was released in 2013.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he couldn't get his appeal.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That's very unfortunate. All right. So I'm going to bring down the mood even more with my next November story.
Look at you. November's been a crazy month.
The whole year
has
really been
a crazy month.
Yeah. So this article was published November 14th by ABC News. And then I also used one from The Guardian. But it is: UK nurse accused in murder of 8 babies denied bail.
Jesus.
Yes. And this is Lucy Letby, who was originally charged with committing the offenses between 2015 and 2016. And this was while she was working at a neonatal unit of the Countess of Chester Hospital in northwestern England.
Oh, so she's like one of those doctors who kills their patients kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was a nurse, but yeah. Same thing. She, yeah.
Well, exactly. Not the same thing, but
yeah. You know what? Yeah. They're medical professionals. And Letby, she appeared in court on Friday, like the Friday before November 14th. And the only time she spoke during her trial were to confirm her name. And then that was it. Wow. She didn't talk any other time. Her lawyer applied for bail. And her judge, Stephen Everett, rejected the application. And he also banned the publication of any information that may identify witnesses and the alleged victims. And she was actually arrested for the third time this week since a police investigation into the baby's deaths at the hospital neonatal unit first began in 2017. So this is like a very confusing case.
Mm-hmm.
They initially started looking into the deaths of 15 babies between 2015 and 2016, and then that scope later widened to include more than a dozen non-fatal collapses in infants in the same period. And then she was also arrested in 2018 and 2019 and not charged. And then she was charged finally this week.
Okay.
And wasn't placed, like, wasn't given bail, essentially. Okay. And there's, like, not a lot of known about this case because it's so complex, basically. So yeah, she, like, the police aren't releasing a lot of information to the public, and it's just kind of being kept under wraps, but she's been, like, out and then just keeps getting arrested for these, like, suspicion of murdering mm-hmm. babies, and it's like, please that's, put her in jail.
Yeah, that's crazy. I've never heard of that, and that's,
yeah,
that's a would be a big serial killer.
Yeah, it would be a big serial killer. And, like, when I just looked up, like, UK nurse, everything that came up was this lady's name. But, mm-hmm. like, all of the articles are very short.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's, like, a total, I think, of 17 babies that they're, like, inquiring about.
Wow.
So, yeah, she was just not a good nurse.
Not at all.
No. Also, neonatal is a hard word to say.
That was the scariest thing. That was thing.
Horrifying. I'm sorry. I had, like, a article pulled up, so an ad started playing. Wow. I thought our lives were about to end. I thought those were the horns sounding for us, honestly.
I thought that a demon was literally going to attack us.
Yeah. Wow. Whew. Jesus Christ. Fucking end it all. Don't know if that'll make it in or not, but if so, sorry for freaking out, guys. But yeah, that, oh, you know what? I am the worst. Keep going. Let's do our rapid fire portion okay. of this.
Yeah, we have a little honorable mentions section.
Yeah.
Where we have just a couple sentences about them because a lot of stuff happened, but if we talked about all of them, it wouldn't be a mini-sode.
Yeah, we could easily, like, do a mini-sode every week, like last podcast, that's over an hour long, yeah. and still not cover everything that happens in the true crime world. So, alas, our honorable mentions.
So, the first one I have is that Peter Sutcliffe died of coronavirus.
Go fuck yourself, Peter Sutcliffe.
Yep. So, he was also known as the Yorkshire Ripper, who he killed 13 women from 1975 to 1980, and he died in a British hospital on November 14th after contracting coronavirus, and he was 74 years old, and he is currently rotting in hell.
Yes, for sure. I don't even believe in heaven and hell, but that man is rotting in hell.
Yep.
All right, so our next one is hundreds of inmates riot at Arizona prison. On November 25th, the day before Thanksgiving, hundreds of inmates grouped together around staff and refused to disperse. The staff started firing pepper balls and rubber bullets. The scene was described like a war zone. two riot teams came out in the end, and no staff members or inmates were seriously injured, which is always good news.
Yeah, but they don't really know why they started rioting.
Yeah.
So, the next one is Charles Darwin's notebooks stolen from Cambridge Library. And when I read this, I was like, holy shit, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So it turns out that these two notebooks that are worth millions of dollars had actually been missing since 2001. Wow. And they thought that they had just been lost in the giant archives of Cambridge University Library. But it turns out that they now can't find them and believe that they have been stolen.
Yeah.
So on November 25th, they officially reported them as stolen, and the notebooks have now been entered into Interpol's database of stolen artworks.
That is fucking crazy.
It is.
Manson family member denied parole for the fourth time. On November 27th, 71-year-old Lisa is what I was going to say. Leslie Van Houten was denied parole for the fourth time in 4 years. California Governor Gavin Newsom refused the parole, stating that she currently poses a threat to society if released from prison at this time. She was charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder, and was sentenced in 1971 originally.
It's crazy to think that members of the Manson family are still, like, here and around and doing things. I don't know why. It just seems so far away to me.
Yeah, it does feel like that. And I think there's a couple of them that are still alive and kicking, mm-hmm. honestly. Which is interesting to think about.
It really is.
We hope that you guys enjoyed this chaotic mini-sode.
Our little catch-up.
Yeah. There's obviously, like we've said, a bunch more that we could have covered, but those are the ones that really stood out to us.
If you see, like, this a crazy true crime-related case come up or current event happen, let us know. Like, tag us in it, stuff like that, so that way we know what you guys want to learn about.
Yeah, I mean, we have our website at crimebinge.com with the submission feature that we always encourage you to use. And you can also email us at crimebinge.com as well if you have, like, an article that you specifically want us to use.
Exactly. Yeah. And please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. We really appreciate it. And check us out on social media at Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast everywhere you listen.
Yeah. And... Keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.